Support for Science Friday comes from TiVo, delivering cable TV and internet TV together in one searchable and unified viewing experience. Available at TiVo.com.
This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. No matter where you're from, whether it's Vermont or Florida, when you think of maple syrup, the thing that comes to mind is pancakes, of course. But after that, it brings up the image of snowy forests with flannel-wearing sap hunters hammering metal spouts into the side of tall maple trees. Well, my next guest has invented a method of harvesting sap in a completely new way by cutting off the top of saplings, plugging a pump right into the top of the stump, and sucking the sap out. Dr. Abby Vandenberg is a research assistant professor in plant biology at the University of Vermont's Proctor Maple Research Center in Underhill Center, Vermont. Also joining us in the studio to discuss all these things, sappy, is Luke Graskin, our video producer, whose video about how we get sap from maple trees is now up on our website at sciencefriday.com. Welcome to the program, both of you.
Thank you.
Hello.
Dr. Vandenberg, let's start with the basics. What is sap? And what is a maple tree doing with all that sap in it this time of the year?
Well, that's a really good question. Sap is predominantly water. And at this time of year, the xylem sap actually contains, in maple trees that is, contains about 2% sucrose along with some other very minor components of other constituents. But it's basically a little bit of sugar and water.
Dr. Vandenberg, take us through the basics then of how maple trees make sap and how does the sap flow through the maple tree?
The entire process depends on fluctuating cycles of above freezing and below freezing temperatures. So when the temperatures drop below freezing, during this freezing phase, the tree actually takes up water from the soil and into the fine branches. And then in the subsequent thawing phase, when temperatures get above freezing, that actually allows positive or above atmospheric pressures to develop within the stem of the tree. And it's that above atmospheric pressure that we actually sort of exploit and allows us to collect the sap from the tree by drilling a tap hole and putting the spout in the tree, as you described earlier.
Yeah, but you don't take the mature trees. You take young saplings, you lop the top off, and then you sort of pump the sap out of the little stump that's left.
Well, if you think of the existing practice of collecting maple sap, but what we're doing is, like you said, drilling a tap hole and inserting a spout into the tree to collect the sap. And in many cases, that process is augmented by the use of vacuum that increases the pressure differential between the inside and the outside of the tree. So with this other system, using smaller juvenile trees, we're simply using the same principle, but sort of offsetting the need for the top of the tree.
Does it need all those leaves at the top? Or?
Well, it certainly does. It needs the above ground parts of the tree, obviously, to produce carbohydrates and store them in the stem. Those are the carbohydrates that are put into the sap, that the tree puts into the sap that we harvest. And the trees that we do this with do have a great deal of above ground biomass. So the excise stem will actually generate new sprouts from dormant buds in the stem the following year. And in actuality, the system is used not on single stem individuals predominantly. It's actually predominantly used with multiple stemmed individuals. Hmm. So there is actually a great deal of living biomass left in the individual plant, even after you excise a particular individual stem.
Now, if this is all really weird to you, to our listeners out there, and you have no idea what we're talking about, I encourage you to go to our website and see Luke Groskin's video up there. It shows you exactly how it's done, and it makes sense. And Luke, you went out there and...
Well, I mean, it's hard to imagine what this kind of looks like. Imagine you're seeing a sapling, and then you just literally lopped off the top, and then you've put this almost kind of surgical respirator-like device on the top of this...
Like a vacuum cleaner hose.
Yeah, cleaner hose. The image of it is really goes contrary to what that first initial thought of what you're thinking about when you think about, you know, maple syrup tapping and you know, the guy on the sleigh with his buckets and you know, he's checking to make sure their ice hasn't formed and all that. It's this kind of romantic notion. And Yeah. And it's the absolute opposite.
Dr. Vandenberg, this is a very unusual winter we're having, and I know that maple trees need a certain kind of coldness, as you say, to alternating warm and cold evenings and days. Is it going to affect the maple the syrup season this year?
Well, it has affected it. We had a very cold March, so the start of the season, the first sap flows, were really delayed throughout most of the maple-producing region. But we've had really great conditions since then, and in a lot of locations, it seems like the actual crop will turn out to be pretty good.
Mm-hmm. And if it didn't turn out to be good, what would happen?
There are lots of things that can happen on an individual producer basis that can be fairly negative if you have a lower, smaller crop than usual.
Right.
But globally, it probably wouldn't affect prices too much because of the strategic reserve of maple syrup maintained by the Quebec Federation of Maple Producers.
Well, wait a minute. A strategic reserve is like oil, like OPEC? I mean, is there a maple syrup cartel?
Exactly. Few years ago, the Federation of Quebec Maple Producers, who are responsible for producing about 80% of the world's maple syrup, they decided to begin maintaining a strategic reserve of maple syrup to help buffer against down years like we could have this season or other years. It's certainly like any agricultural crop, there are good years and bad years. And so they maintain that reserve to help buffer the supply and the price in the case of both very, very good years and very, very bad years.
And so is your new method meant to bolster U.S. potential to counteract the Canadian reserves?
Perhaps not so much on such a large scale. It's really intended to provide another tool for an individual producer to increase their productivity. So, normally when you want to expand your maple operation, you need to buy 30 or 40 acres of mature forested land, which can often be prohibitive. In this case, you might be able to increase your production by adding an acre or two of production on existing non-forested land that you might have near your operation. So it's really intended to increase production on the individual producer scale.
Is this the same quality of maple syrup we'd get out of the big mature trees?
Absolutely. It's the same sap and the same quality, and the syrup produced this way tastes just the same.
What accounts for the taste of the syrup? And we see different kinds of tastes, different grades of it.
Sure. Most of the flavor that develops in maple syrup comes from the reactions when we apply heat as the sap is concentrated from sap density up to syrup density in maple evaporators. So these are things like sugar degradation reactions, things like caramelization, as well as Maillard reactions. All of these are going on in the evaporator as we concentrate it from sap into syrup, and it's responsible for the majority of flavors that we appreciate in maple syrup.
Mm-hmm. Also, I understand that it may have something to do, the flavor, with there are bacteria growing inside the maple tree.
Well, not inside the maple trees, actually. It's mostly it happens after the sap exits the tree, the effects of microorganisms. So the predominant carbohydrate in sap, in maple sap, is sucrose, which isn't a reducing sugar. It's not very reactive. But as microorganisms act upon the sap and feed on the sap, they will convert a lot of that sucrose into its component sugars, glucose and fructose, which are reducing sugars. And so they are much more reactive when we apply heat during the concentration process. So essentially, the more microorganism activity that occurs in sap, often there's a greater potential to develop a lot more color and potentially flavor when we go through the processing phase.
Well, like all artisanal things, like wine and cheese and beer, our microbes seem to be controlling
everywhere. Everything.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And if you want to see this new kind of way of harvesting sap, go to our website at sciencefriday.com, where Luke has created this great video that features this technique of actually sucking the sap out of a little sapling tree stumps. Do you see this as replacing those big trees, or augmenting them, or allowing them to be grown in different places that you don't normally find maple syrup trees.
No, not at all. And we first of all, you can't escape the fundamental physiology of maple production. So you still need to have freezing and thawing temperatures and a great deal of them at this time of year. So that will not allow this to have maple production in a different geographic range. And essentially, the economics of a system like this are about the same as the traditional maple system. So it's not designed or intended to replace the existing system. It is essentially designed to provide another tool in the toolbox, so to speak. Hmm. So if a producer has a little bit of existing non-forested land, they could use this to expand their production in addition to their traditional sugar bush.
Now, look, you spoke to a traditional maple farmer in your video.
Yeah, I spoke to Craig Haney of the Stone Barn Center for Food and Agriculture. And I asked him about this method, and his reaction was mostly positive. He thought this could be an economic boon for a farmer who, you know, if their sugar bush, which is a group of trees that you're going to tap, if they had been destroyed by a tornado or a hurricane like we had a couple years ago, this could be a potential benefit to them. He remarked that the big thing about this is that it's the romantic notion that you're going out into a wild forest and that you're tapping these trees. And that's the big thing that you kind of have to get across, is this notion of
that's maple, gone. That's
yeah,
gone.
That maple tapping, is it essentially a wild harvest? When you consider that, you know, a long time ago, we were going out and collecting Christmas trees by chopping down wild trees, and that we don't do that now. We get all of our Christmas trees from plantations.
And we get our syrup is like the lot of little blue pipes connecting a lot of trees together.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So it's a matter of just kind of, can you accept this in your mindset?
Yeah. Well, we will. Thank you, Dr. Vandenberg, for taking time to be with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Amy Vandenberg is a research assistant professor in plant biology at the University of Vermont's Proctor's Maple Research Center in Underhill Center, Vermont. Luke Roskin, our video producer, up there on our website at sciencefriday.com. This great little video. Thank you, Luke.
Thank you.
See you later.